Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Over the past 2 months, there have been growing concerns about a new pandemic, a mental health pandemic brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. According to a Kaiser Family Foundation poll, nearly half of Americans say the coronavirus crisis has damaged their mental or emotional health. Will the new normal after the coronavirus pandemic be too much for the mental health of some Americans? Well, tonight we're examining that question. My guests are Emmy Award-winning author and actress Debbie Morgan and Dr. Jeff Menzies, doctor of psychology and lead consultant and coach with Mind on the Matter. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you believe that you are experiencing anxiety because of the COVID-19 pandemic, whether it's a little bit or a lot, if you've been depressed, if you've been worried, this is the program for you. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Menzies and Debbie, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me, Harold. How are you
Absolutely.
Today?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. And I want to start with you. How are you doing today? You have had a bit of a rough ride dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Today's a pretty good day. I'm doing okay. You know, that day about 2 weeks ago when I had that emotional meltdown that I posted on my Instagram was because, you know, as I had said, I'd been watching the news 24/7 and decided I just needed to back off for a bit. And I was leaving to go to the grocery store, but before I left, I saw where they were reopening the state of Georgia and looking at the city of Atlanta and all of these people of color going into malls and nail and hair salons, all of these non-essential places, and not wearing masks. And it just sort of just overwhelmed me and freaked me out. And I know for a lot of people, it is really getting to them emotionally and mentally, not being able to get out of their houses. I'm just the opposite. It freaks me more out when I know I have to leave to go to a grocery store or, you know, the drugstore or something like that.
If you don't mind, can you tell me a little bit more about what happened and how you were feeling in the days and weeks leading up to this incident?
Well, you know, actually, you know, I had been doing quite well. I'll tell you, one of the things that has affected me so much when we talk about mental illness on a very personal level is that those living in such despair and not being able to leave their homes because they're living in abusive relationships. And, you know, I'm a child of domestic violence, and I cannot even fathom what it would have been like for my mom running out of the house into the street at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with nowhere to go, trying to get away from my father in the face of this kind of pandemic. And growing up in that kind of environment, which haunted me for years, I developed PTSD and wasn't even diagnosed until just about a year ago. And I went for most of my life suffering from terrible sleep issues and eventually found a therapy that was a miracle for me, and that was neurofeedback. And with this pandemic going on and looking at the news and especially looking at the alarming rate of African Americans that are getting sick and dying from this virus more than any other group of people in the country, thinking about that, seeing that picture on the news, and then thinking about, you know, all of our people, African Americans who have suffered so much back from slavery and Jim Crow and nowadays mothers being afraid every time their black sons leave the house if they're going to come back alive and not be shot down because of the color of their skin. All of these thoughts started coming into my head when I saw that picture. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started having sleep issues again, and it kind of freaked me out. And so I called my neurofeedback doctor because, of course, his office is closed, and I hadn't been able to see him. And I said, oh, my God, my sleep issues are returning. And he said, no, not necessarily. He said, because I've reset a lot of your brain waves. He said, what's happening is, he said, when you go through the kind of trauma that you did as a child and growing up and even into a lot of your adulthood, he said, and then you have this pandemic, on a very subconscious level, those two things can kind of collide, and that could start affecting your sleep. He said, is there anything else that you're doing differently? And I said, well, I've been watching the news 24/7. He said, stop. Mm-hmm. You have to stop. So I started, in which, you know, I'm not a mental health expert, of course. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that question, how do we even address the issue? And it's like a big question mark for me, Harold, because I think, you know, there just are not enough systems set up in this country to deal with mental health issues. That was even before COVID-19.
Exactly. And that certainly is one of the concerns that many reports, not only from the National Institute of Mental Health, but all of these polls that have come out about this are raising questions about. Let me ask Dr. Menzies about this. Based on what Debbie was sharing with us, is what she is experiencing, as difficult as it is for her, this is not unusual, is it, for a lot of people right now?
You're right on point, Harold, and peace to you, Debbie Morgan. It's good to be on the show with you tonight.
Thank you so much. You too.
And really appreciate you for sharing your story, because it takes a lot of courage, you know, to really be that transparent and open about having mental health issues, and especially talking about the early life trauma that you've experienced. And so what her neurotherapist is actually pointing out about the two things colliding is like what we call triggering. And so what you're experiencing now is that sense of uncertainty, that sense of doom and gloom, if you will, not knowing how things are going to fare tomorrow. It generates a certain sense of anxiety. So, yeah, Harold, all of this is very, very typical. And like you said, not to minimize the pain and the difficulty behind it, but it is a typical part of the traumatic experiences that many of us are going through right now as we are exposing ourselves to the news. And I'm so glad that you stopped watching the news, Sister Morgan.
Me too.
I mean, that machine right there is something else. I mean, just constantly getting hit with barrages of misinformation, disinformation, conflicting information. And what happens is that people get more and more confused the more that they listen to. Now, the thing that's consistent, though, as you pointed out, Sister Morgan, is that the imagery of people being sick, the imagery of ambulances going past, the imagery of those bodies being stacked up in the back of that truck in New York, all of this stuff is very, very much triggering to people, those with previous mental health issues, as well as those who have never had a diagnosed or a highly symptomatic mental health issue.
Jeff, you know, one of the things that a lot of the reports that have come out have suggested that the mental health issues have presented in the form of depression and substance abuse, mm-hmm. PTSD, even suicide. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam today, during his press conference, spoke about the opioid crisis in Virginia. He said that there have been more deaths and more calls during the first 5 months of 2020 than there were in all of 2019. Now, while he did not necessarily associate that with the coronavirus crisis, he did say, and what we're talking about tonight, is that we are already beginning to deal with more drug abuse as well as mental health issues during this time. He said it, yep. But he didn't say it.
Right. And so the thing about that is there's many levels that that can be related. You know, the uptick in overdoses, heroin, as well as the correlation with COVID-19. So one thing is that you have people out there who are struggling financially. And so let's say, for example, the dope dealer, the one that's pushing the heroin or the opioids. Now, they may be cutting their products with things that are more dangerous than what they would usually use to make it spread more, right? And so then you have people who are addicted using a substance that may be either more potent or just more dangerous because of the foreign things that are in it. And so that could be contributing to the overdose. But also at the same time, you have people who are using who might be experiencing doom and gloom, and they might want a deeper escape from the reality. Because a lot of times when people are using substances like that, it's an escape mechanism. It's an attempt to numb yourself to the realities that are surrounding you every day. And so I see it on one or two or even both of those levels, the correlation between the uptick in opioid overdoses and COVID-19, because there's definitely a correlation. I mean, the first 5 months, and you hitting harder than all of last year, is definitely something there. Yeah.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the possibility of another pandemic, a mental health crisis in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Diana, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much. To the doctor, I wanted to ask, because do you think that the medical profession, I'm talking about mental illness, do you think that the medical profession will have to reassess its definition of mental illness to add loneliness, for example? I know that may be the question, but I remember when the pandemic, the stay-at-home orders were first being issued to the states, that I told some friends and some family members that I think what's going to happen is you're going to see an increase in pet adoptions. Why? And I was right. I mean, I wanted to find out if the doctor believes that there's going to be a reassessment of how we view mental illness in regards to, you know, people being shut in and people having been told that they have to be shut in, you know?
Right on. Yeah, thank you for that question, Diane. And so there won't necessarily have to be an adjustment on how we perceive mental illness, because loneliness is already a characteristic trait in certain mental health diagnoses or mental illness diagnoses. And so when you're talking about loneliness, you're talking about a characteristic trait of depression. So a lot of times people will, if feeling lonely or having that sense of isolation or that lack of connection with other people, they can actually slip into what we call depression. Yeah, and so it's directly related to that. And so that's what it sounds like you're speaking about. And so that's why companion pets are so valuable. And you're right about that. The adoption of pets is going to go up, and you were correct with your prediction. And it's because that helps to curb that sense of loneliness, because you actually have a living being there that you can not only connect with emotionally but also physically with touch. And the amount of unconditional love that people get from, say, a dog, you know, it's comparable. I mean, it's not a total replacement, but it's a good substitute for human contact and human interaction. And we won't have to reassess, but we are paying attention to increase in depression related to loneliness and isolation. And you'll find that that'll be different for different populations of people. So, for example, and it's a difference in worldview, Dr. Edwin Nichols talks about this a lot, to where people of African descent, we typically value people-to-people interaction more than we do material things. And so when you have a people that connect and is naturally bonded like that, being rendered incapable of doing so, then what you have is a greater chance of that particular population suffering more so than what you would say maybe the European or white population would.
Okay. Debbie, I'm sorry. Diana, thank you so much for your phone call, and please be safe. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Debbie, after the incident a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure you had an opportunity to speak with your physician, how did he suggest that you address this? Were there, did he prescribe medicine or any other kind of what did he suggest?
The first thing he described is what I had said previously, back up off the news. That was right. The first thing. And what actually, Harold, what I have found for me and what I would even offer to other people, you know, not being, you know, a doctor and not knowing enough about it, but the best thing that I could offer for myself and anybody else is just finding ways and learning how to cope with stress. I mean, you know, getting out of the house. I mean, I don't mean going to crowded malls and beaches, but, you know, going for a long, quiet walk, a jog, riding a bicycle. But if you live in a large metropolitan city like New York where those things aren't feasible, then perhaps even learning how to meditate, which has a very positive impact on calming and relaxing the mind. I'm learning how to play the piano, which has been a huge distraction. I can get lost in it for hours.
Right. And the thing about playing the piano, Sis, is that you're using both hemispheres of your brain because you have to use both hands, oftentimes each hand doing something totally different from the other. And it's very powerful. That neural therapy that you're speaking about, it provides a tangible way of perceiving the changes in your brain activity. And so you're talking about meditation. You show you your mind when you're first worrying as far as the brain scans are concerned, and you can literally see the brain calming down by using certain breathing techniques.
Exactly, and that's what my doctors also offer to me when I'm on my own is the meditation, and he's given me certain breathing exercises, which has just helped tremendously. Because when I first went to him, and he, you know, did an assessment, he said, "My goodness, you remind me of some of my patients that have come back from Afghanistan."
That's right.
You know, they were just like all my waves, my brain waves were like just all wacky. And, you know, he said something to me that I'd never thought about before. He said, "You know, it's interesting how people will go for their yearly physicals to make sure that their bodies are okay, but they never think about their brains, which age too, and have to be just as healthy, if not more so." And I said, "You're so right. I never thought about it like that."
Yeah. And where we are right now, getting those kinds of checkups are much more difficult because you don't often have the ability to sit in front of a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, you're usually, for a lot of people, you're on the other side of a computer screen. Mm-hmm. Wanted to share a resource real quick. For those of you who may be having some mental health struggles right now, there is a hotline, 888-997-3147. That's 888-997-3147. And we also, as always, will be posting resources on our website on whur.com after 8:30 tonight. Debbie, do we have to let you go? Do you have a few extra minutes?
A couple.
Okay, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm will continue on WHUR, but this conversation will be on Sirius XM Channel 141 in a few seconds. Lines are still open. We're still taking your calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about a possible mental health crisis during and after the COVID-19 pandemic. My guests are Emmy Award-winning author and actress Debbie Morgan and Dr. Jeff Menzies, doctor of psychology and lead consultant and coach with Mind on the Matter. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. For you, Debbie, how has the remedy, or remedies, I should say, how have they helped you move through this? Because we are still in this. The issue is still there. You can turn off the news, but you can probably look out of your window and notice that your neighbors are still, like yourself, like all of us, in the midst of this pandemic.
Yeah, well, the community that I live in, you know, I see all the cars parked out on the street, so I'm assuming all of my neighbors are in their house or, working
too
remotely from home. So I don't really see anybody. But if I may, Harold,
sure,
if I can sort of diverge off into another path, I'd like to bring up. I know we're talking about mental health issues. But, you know, I'm not necessarily a very religious person, but I'm very spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we have a very loving God, But I think at times God gets pissed off when he looks at all that he has given us and what we're doing. I mean, you know, I think this is one of the problems. People just think about themselves. They don't give a damn about anybody else. I mean, it's like the, some people who are out here, like the virus doesn't even exist. And if they think that them getting sick is not real, then at least having the appreciation for, you know, for others, not getting other people sick. And I think sometimes God allows us to suffer to get our attention. And look at how we're treating each other, the less fortunate, the racism in this country, how we're destroying our planet. I know in Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing, he has, you know, they have that famous line, wake up, wake up. It's like God saying, wake up. And sometimes it just seems like we've just lost our humanity.
Yeah. And to that very point, whether you are, you know, spiritual or certainly, you know, a person of faith, whatever your faith foundation is, you know, Dr. Menzi, the difficult thing for people who may find solace in going to church or to temple or to mosque and to be in that, you know, that setting with people, with like-minded people, that creates another barrier to mental or emotional health because you can't go to church for help.
Right, right. Absolutely, man. And that's why you see a lot of churches that are eager to open back up and people who are willing to actually fill the pews. It creates a sort of conflict, an internal conflict, because on one hand, you've got man and law and politicians telling you what you can and cannot do as far as worshiping God. And then on the other hand, you have what your faith is telling you, that you're supposed to be faithful no matter what the danger is, no matter what the crisis is that stands before you. And so a lot of people are really having their faith tested, and it's creating what we call cognitive dissonance, which is that when your thoughts and your beliefs don't match up with your reality. And so people are really having their faith checked and their faith rocked right now. And it's very, very, very important that during these times, as Sister Morgan is saying, is that people, you know, get back in touch with that personal aspect of God within them and understand that you haven't lost that connection, even though you may not be able to fellowship in the ways that you used to. But it's a heck of a time, man, especially around the faith-based community. And people have passed all kind of negative judgment on churches and pastors who have decided to open up the doors as soon as the cities or states have said you can. And then people end up sick. People are talking bad about those folks, but I understand what it is that they're facing and they're trying to negotiate in this crisis right now.
Debbie, I'll let you have a final word because I know we have to let you go. Your final thoughts?
You know, my final thought is really just what I said earlier. I know there, you know, there are some people who just feel like they cannot stay in the house one more day or they will go absolutely nuts. And so, I get it. I understand it. I'm fortunate. I'm not one of those people. As I said, I'm more panicky about going out. But all I would say to those people now that, you know, states, mostly all of the states have reopened and the stay-at-home orders have been lessened, I would just say, please take stock of others and be responsible. And wear a mask, you know, wherever you're going. Don't just think about yourself. Think about somebody else. If you think you may not get sick, but you can possibly get somebody else sick, you know, without even knowing whether you're sick or not, you're asymptomatic. So I just say, you know, I'm not coming down on anybody who says, look, I just got to get out of the house. I just want people to be responsible.
Yeah.
Be smart.
Absolutely. And Debbie Morgan, I wish you only the best of health and continue to take care of yourself. And thank you for being part of this conversation.
Absolutely. And you both do the same.
Thank you so much.
Debbie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now. Good evening.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sergeant Wells calling from Clinton. Thanks for calling, Sergeant. What's on your mind?
I've been 20 years. I was medically retired from the military. I have a spinal cord. I'm an incomplete paraplegic. Up until 4 months ago, I just started to do fine. I was using the walker to ambulate short distances. Now, all of a sudden, I can't do these things, and I think my condition has exacerbated to the point where I can't sleep. When I get a cold, first thing I think of is the COVID, you know, because of my medical condition. Now, I don't know if this is PTS. I don't know if I'm stressing out over nothing, but I sure feel the effects of being hemmed up in the house, which I don't mind, but I can't do much of anything at the moment.
Have you been tested?
I heard.
Sergeant Wells, have you been tested?
I have not been tested. My daughter asked me to go ahead and get tested.
I think your daughter is right. Your daughter is right. And before we even get to the mental health piece, the physical health piece is really important. You said yourself that you were just starting to use a walker, and now you are having some difficulty with that. Listen to your daughter. Get tested. That is the very first thing, because you may be within the risk category. Don't know whether or not you have any other underlying conditions, but if you do you live alone or does someone live with you?
I have my godson that just moved in with me.
Okay. That's important because, you know, and if you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
I'm 64. I know I'm at the at risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Go tomorrow. Let's just, you know, call it what it is. Take care of your health first, and you know you can get tested. As a matter of fact, free testing in the state of Maryland starts tomorrow, whether you have symptoms or not.
Do I have to set up an appointment?
You do not. You do not. As a matter of fact, and there is a. You can go on Friday. The vehicle emission station in Hyattsville opens on Friday, but you can go to the health department in Cheverly, right off of 295. You can go tomorrow, and again, you don't need an appointment. But if at all possible, whether it's your godson or your daughter, or you know, have someone take you because you need to get that out of the way. You got to kind of know where you are first. And it may just be a cold. It may just be, just a bad day as it relates to the physiology of your legs. And certainly, I'm not a doctor. But that's the first thing. First things first.
I feel perfectly fine now.
That's true. But you still need. But you know, that's the whole thing about testing. You know, not only does the Prince George's and the state, but everybody kind of needs to know where they are, and to be quite honest, I've been living in my house, you know, by myself for these past 2.5 months. But now that there's free testing, you don't have to have symptoms. I'm going to go get tested because I want to know where I am, whether something happened in the grocery store or you know something like that. Because I have people in my family with underlying conditions, and so you know I need to know where I am as well. Now, with that said, Dr. Menzies, talk to him if you can about the other piece, the emotional, mental piece that he's kind of struggling with.
Right on. Yeah, and thank you for calling in and sharing your story, Sergeant, and thank you for your service as well.
Yes, sir.
And so, what you're talking about, I think you hit the nail pretty much on the head when you talked about, you know, it's triggering the trauma that you may have experienced and you know when you were active duty, especially, you know, having an injury now and what we call regressing. You know, so you made progress and then the stressful event occurred and you kind of regress, you know, you went backwards to where you can no longer function as good as you were functioning. And so that often happens, you know, because stress, and you said exacerbated. And so, yeah, that's the thing that happens is that stress can add on to especially our physical conditions that we already have. That's why people that have heart conditions, you know, are or should be, if they're not, so to try not to get angry, try to stay relaxed, try to minimize your anxiety because we know that that will lead you quicker to your next event. And so it's that whole connection between the mind and the body is what you're pointing out here. And, you know, one thing that when I'm coaching people, what I like to tell them to do is to use their imagination or what we call creative visualization, right? And that's when you can literally imagine yourself in your mind walking again with your walker. And because you have physically already experienced the ability to do that, it shouldn't be too difficult for you to use your mind to get your body back to where it was prior to the stress of this COVID-19 pandemic. And so here's the other thing is that if it is stress, and if your former trauma is being triggered again, you definitely will not only want to go get physically tested out, but what Sister Morgan was saying earlier is that you want to also maybe set an appointment. I don't know if you can go up to the VA, Walter Reed or something like that, but set an appointment to talk with a psychiatrist or a psychologist there that may be able to help you with some coping strategies. And, you know, you want to ask them specifically for stress reduction coping strategies. They can teach you how to, you know, stop your mind from wondering. Because like you said, your first thing you think in COVID, right? First thing you think, oh, man, that's that Rona. And so you want to be able to strengthen your mind to the point to where you can dismiss those types of thoughts that create panic and anxiety in you. And instead of going in the direction of those thoughts, you can replace it with more healthy and beneficial thoughts. Like, I've been through worse than this. I'm strong. You know what I mean? I'm literally a soldier. I'm a sergeant. You know, and kind of rest on your experiences as being a very strong and courageous man.
Well, Sergeant Wells, please continue to take care of yourself. And as soon as possible, go ahead and get tested. And kind of find out, you know, what your status is in that regard. And then, you know, you'll be better informed and better able to kind of move forward with your life. But we really appreciate you sharing your story with us. And as Dr. Menzies said, certainly thank you for your service. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Jeff, one of the things that I have struggled with, and maybe you could talk to me a little bit about this, is that I've been fine. I've been working from home, and I'm a homebody. So being, just stuck in the house mm-hmm. hasn't been really problematic for me. My struggle is when I look at my, you know, my company of friends who pre-COVID are so difficult to get in contact with because they are out and about. But now I worry so much about them because they are struggling mm-hmm. with being in the house. And I don't have any anxiety, but I do worry, you know, about them. Because they're used to going to the parties and the waterfront and, you know, doing all of these wonderful things. I'll catch up with you next week, Harold, and then you catch up with me 2 weeks and you, right. you know, because that, you know, but now they're shut down.
Right.
And they're really, really struggling. What suggestion do you have for those people?
Right. Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful question and point, Harold, because you're right. There are two types of people right now, homebodies that feel at home and outgoing people who are feeling trapped and suffocating even. And so, you know, you're absolutely right that those type of people, what I suggest is that they find this time as an opportunity to kind of reinvent themselves, to identify other ways that they can express themselves and be social. Now, almost everybody's on some form of social media. And so that's one thing. But the other part is to actually, you can still get out in a safe way. And so those people who are so used to kicking it and clubbing and going down to the wharf and all that stuff, you know, find you a nice park, you know, and start taking walks. These are the types of social activities that are also healthy for you. You know, you get some type of physical and mental benefits from them. And so you may not be able to go kick it. You may not be able to go to happy hour anymore, but you can definitely take that walk along that trail. You know, like you said, put your mask on and stay safe and practice social distancing. But at the same time, you know, you don't have to restrict yourself to just the house. Find you some nature. Get out there. It's going to take some getting used to, though. You know, some people, aren't really nature types. You know, they get out there and they're paranoid about bugs and all that other kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you reacclimate yourself to that, you will find that it's probably the most beneficial thing that you've done for yourself in a long, long time. You know, you can get together a walking club, bike ride club, you know, just start doing things outdoors so that, you know, four walls don't close in on so much.
You know, one of the things that really surprised me and it kind of gave me a little bit of a fright, because you really don't get a chance to know how people really are until you are in the midst of a crisis.
Yes.
And then you see how they react. And, you know, I had a friend call me the other day, and she was falling apart. She was having a major crisis. Mm. I mean, you know, in tears, inconsolable about catching COVID-19. She's in the house in a community that is far from crowded, in a house by herself, but was literally terrified of, you know, of going out. And what she told me was that she finally called her doctor, and she did have some counseling, and she was prescribed an antidepressant, you know, mm-hmm. drug. And I think that is a small look into a window of what we may see going forward, because as all of the public servants, the politicians, and the folks on the street say, we may never go back to the way we were pre-coronavirus without a vaccine. And that vaccine may not be coming quickly. And some people may not be prepared mentally or emotionally to even deal with the new normal once we get through phase 1, 2, 3, 4, and however many other phases there may be for reopening.
Right. Yeah, man. And so you're right. And I expect an uptick in the prescribing of anti-anxiety and antidepressants up through this time. One of the things about this crisis is that we don't see an end in sight. And so if we knew, like, hurricane, you know that this storm is going to blow over and eventually it's going to be done. Right now, we can't necessarily say that about this particular pandemic. And so the sense of not knowing, it kind of increases and amplifies people's anxieties, fears, and concerns. Now, for the people that are at home and they are, as you described your friend, you know, basically falling apart, you know, those people, they will likely reach out and will likely be prescribed a medicine, but that psychotropic med that's being prescribed to them won't necessarily cure the situation. What it would do is it'll calm them enough, it'll quote unquote normalize them enough to where they can get through another day. I like what Debbie Morgan was saying as far as the therapeutic approach that she's taking, because it actually empowers her and it gives her a sense of control over her own situation. She has tools and techniques that she can apply that can shift her from being in anxious mode to being more calm and relaxed. But one other thing, Harold, and what you're talking about earlier is the testing. It's mm-hmm. very important that once people get tested and they know that they are negative, then what you can start to do, and I'm not necessarily suggesting this, but this is an option, they can start doing what's called quarantining, to where you know that you and this other person, these other two people, this group of four, you all have tested negative. And you all are very careful in all your other interactions, and you agree to socialize with each other in a small group. And you know that y'all are negative, and you are making a pact with each other to maintain your safety so that you can maintain your negative status. And people will begin to be able to socialize once again, albeit in limited and different ways. And then I also agree with you, brother, that we're not going back to pre-COVID times. I think this is shifted, and the shift is permanent. How it looks on the other end of all of this, it remains to be seen.
You know, one of the things that Virginia Governor Ralph Northam said today, that, and it was a really brief comment, and he just spoke to where people were. And he was speaking about while we're moving through this and talking about we're all in this together, but he spoke about some restaurant that was able to open under phase one in Virginia, but then had to close again because people were not behaving. People were acting out. And he said today that, you know, that we really should think about others, that we should be kinder to others, that we should be, you know, aware that this is a different kind of situation. And not every mental or emotional crisis is depression and, you know, the kind of turning inside. Some people have a tendency to act out. And they're not going to cooperate with the rules. You have a whole lot of people running around saying, you know, this is a free country, and I shouldn't have to wear a mask,
right?
You know, and that has nothing to do with safety. That has to do with, you know, with acting out. You know, how best can, you know, the masses deal with that? Right. You know, short of confronting them, what's the message for the people who are so angry right now, mm-hmm. and feeling that kind of emotional loss that they just want to rebel, and that's right. Not helpful.
Yeah, you're pointing out a very, very, very serious but understated problem that we're facing right now, Harold. I mean, and the people that you're talking about, the people that are rebelling, so to speak, are trying to buck the system.
Yeah.
Some of that is anxiety driven. You know, it's anxiety of the loss of rights. But those people usually maintain that sense of losing rights and have been hypervigilant in that way. We're talking about the protesters that stormed the Michigan Capitol with armed, right? We're talking about the ones that did the same thing in Virginia recently. And so what you have is this group of people, some of which are actually looking for a reason to set off what some are calling a race war, others are predicting a coming civil war. And this is just the excuse and the reason to set it off. And the other aspect of mental disorder, it does relate to those type of people. You're talking about antisocial personality disorders, and you're also talking about narcissistic personality disorders. These are people, the antisocial are people who not only don't necessarily like other people, but they seek to hurt other people. They get pleasure from creating pain and discomfort in other people. And so I saw a video the other day where it was this woman, she walked up to this man and just started coughing real nastily in his face. And mm-hmm. she did that, you know, just to spite him. You've got the people who are talking about, you can't take my rights away. That's anxious. And they also don't feel like they need to wear a mask because they also feel that the world is theirs and it has a high sense of entitlement. And so what I suggest is if you ever come across a person like that, your best bet is to just distance yourself, because that person typically thrives off of conflict, and they are there to provoke you into a conflict with them, which then gives them a reason to draw down their weapon and open fire. And we've seen that time and time again, unfortunately, with young black men being the victims on the receiving end of that anger and that lashing out. And so don't be provoked out there, y'all. If you see somebody not wearing a mask and you feel like they should strongly wear a mask, you know, gauge the situation appropriately, and it's better to probably not confront them, but to just keep your distance.
Absolutely, because you just never know how someone is going to react. How right. would you recommend in these last few minutes that people who may be, you know, struggling emotionally with where they are right now, and I'm not talking about someone who is in any kind of severe situation, but someone who may gradually be feeling the walls of this pandemic kind of closing in on them and may have, you know, more and more moments of anxiety, low-level anxiety. Is there a way to prepare for life after this pandemic emotionally and realizing that things may never be the same?
Yes. And what I've been advocating for, Harold, is for people to use this time to develop a new skill, to learn something new about something new or something old. But you want to take this time to transform yourself. And I know this sounds kind of pie in the sky, but this is something that each and every person has the ability to do right now, regardless of the amount of money you make, the resources you have, and where you live. I suggest using this time as much as possible to develop yourself so that not only will the times be different when this is all over, but you will also be different. And that helps. If you're going along with the change, then the change is going to impact you differently than if you tried to stay the same, or if you were stagnated, or if you were just sitting somewhere depressed. Stay active. Develop a skill set. I mean, do whatever you can. Start knitting. Do puzzles. You want something that's going to keep your brain active, keep your body active, and definitely stay out of that doom and gloom news cycle, right? Check in every now and then so you can stay aware, but unplug. There's too much more life out here to be lived. You got skills. You got capabilities. Tap into that stuff so that you emerge a new version of you than before this COVID-19 hit.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, Jeff, for those who would like to contact you through Mind on the Matter, how can they find you on the web?
I'm on my Facebook page is The Real Dr. Jeff Menzies. That's D-R-J-E-F-F. Last name is Menzies, M-E-N-Z-I-S-E. My Twitter handle is Jeff Menzies, Dr. Jeff Menzies. Instagram is Dr. Jeff Menzies. And my email address is D-R-J-E-F-F. @mindonthematter.com.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Jeff. You stay safe. We also want to thank Debbie Morgan for sharing her experiences with us. And as always, this information will be posted on our website on WHUR.com after the program. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, May 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Be safe. Good night.